Hey. This is the Commissioner of Cynicville checking in on Wednesday, May 25th, 2017. And I guess yesterday I sort of touched on some of the macro things that I think underlay the whole Ottawa Senators not selling out Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Final. You know, basically where the thrust of everything I say on here is sort of framed within the notion that the sports industrial complex is in some trendline troubles. The way people consume sports, the way it's delivered to people, is undergoing a radical change, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, which sports properties, which leagues adapt to it the best. My money being on the NBA to do it. They've already started an esports league, for fuck's sake. And who will react slowly to it and get crushed by the wave? My money, of course, is on the NHL, because hockey's never really been able to understand that people like other sports. But I guess it's also worth going into some of the micro things. To me, there's a great book to be written sort of about the Ottawa Senators from the concept stage through, I guess, the early aughts. You could sort of decide on when to bring the curtain down on it. People know the story. Maybe it's when Eugene Melnyk bought the team out of bankruptcy. Maybe it's that sweet spot in time between the Game 6 win against New Jersey in 2003 and the late agonizing Game 7 loss at home in that 2003 Eastern Final, when they very well might have, if they'd won that game, gone on to win the Stanley Cup against the Anaheim Ducks in the next round. I just think that would be a really interesting take, because I think it would better increase understanding, stimulate thought about what's going on in the present day with, obviously, you know, 1,000 empty seats at a playoff game. I mean, you'd have to go back to 1987, like, who thought it would be a good idea to bring a hockey team to Ottawa? Like, you know, River City's going to have a band, you know, we've had hockey teams in Hartford, Winnipeg, and Quebec City, and by gum, that put them on the map. And it was obviously a much different NHL. The league really hadn't modernized. The explosion in salaries that really started, I would probably say, around 1990-91, after Wayne Gretzky's trade to Los Angeles. It hadn't really taken place yet. I don't know if someone could have foreseen that had happened. I mean, John Ziegler was the league president at the time and had done a pretty good job of getting actual cost certainty into hockey. I mean, at the same time, probably hurting its national profile. I mean, it went from being a legit number three sport in North America ahead of the NBA in the mid-70s to probably being a distant fourth by some time in the early 90s, but yeah, it would just be interesting to think about how these sort of, like, you know, dreamers, you know, Bruce Firestone, the original ownership group, how they pulled it off. Because I think if you'd gone back 30 years, so 1987, if you'd stopped 100 Canadians on the street to ask them, you know, what will be the next Canadian city to get an NHL franchise, 99 of them would have told you Hamilton. You know, that year it hosted the Canada Cup, probably the best international hockey series ever played in terms of the quality of play. You know, hate to, you know, I'm actually got a duck because you can't say anything, you know, because it might be interpreted as remotely negative toward the 72 series, but it's true. The hockey was better by 87 on both sides. But somehow they got it together. But at the same time, this was sort of a group of people who, you know, they had the concept that they would, you know, put a hockey team in Ottawa, build an arena out in Kanata, thinking that the growth would come there with the, you know, burst of the tech sector, which came and went, and the growth never followed. But I mean, it was such a, in some ways it was visionary, but in some ways it was also kind of a slapdash thing. You know, in the early years when they played at the Ottawa Civic Center, I once had it related to me by a fellow, Dave Dakers. He works in sports management on the West Coast. At the time when I talked to him, he was with the Victoria Royals junior hockey team. And he actually worked for Terrace Investments, and he was part of the Senators' game day operations. And as he related, the way he got the job basically was Terrace Investments was like, does anyone here know anything about sports? And he would kind of put his hand up because he had played 3 years of football as a defensive lineman for the Queens Golden Gaels, in university and was saying, like, all right. And so there he ended up being with the Senators for their early years when they were not the primary attendants at the Ottawa Civic Center, now TD Place Arena. And they basically had to bring in their everything on a flatbed truck, set up, and then just take it down so the Ottawa 67s, the OHL team, could have the place back. That really happened. But again, I think that book needs to be written, you know, about, you know, how it came to be that the Senators ended up playing in this out-of-the-way arena, because, I mean, that's one of the factors in why you got to have the state of affairs that you do. It was the publisher at the Ottawa Sun. I worked there. Rick Gibbons was the one who said it. I mean, as I pause to sort of catch my breath here while I record this in a park in Toronto, I've got to record fast because I'm sure this place is going to be leveled and redeveloped for condos probably by the end of the week, because, hey, the city's priorities are a joke. Anyways, you'd want to cover those years from the time the team was getting off the ground, you know, winning the bid for an expansion franchise in December 1990, playing those first years at the Civic Center, which it's really hard to believe when you would walk in there, like, wow, NHL hockey was played here in my lifetime. And then the period of being this sort of small market success story, getting competitive, but having to compete with the, you know, 63-cent Canadian dollar through the late 90s, you know, going into bankruptcy, and then, you know, Eugene Melnyk sort of coming in as a savior, and more or less, I mean, maybe not the savior you wanted, but the savior you needed at that time in the early aughts, because ultimately I do think there has been a sort of a lot of ignorance about this. The first being, obviously, that the type of media people, I'm not going to name names, you can go on Twitter and find them, they've had enough, you know, shade thrown at them in the last 24 hours, who just throw out their, you know, their buzzword hot, one, you know, one word hot takes, inexcusable, pathetic, embarrassing, you know, because the game's not sold out, because apparently it's the fault of the customers and not the fault of the owner or the past owners or, you know, the people running the business, that they failed to, you know, fill the building. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's still 18,000 people there. There's still $3 million in revenue. But ultimately, you do have to look at a lot of the sort of microeconomic factors in that, obviously. The location's one. Two is, you know, there's people who are kind of put off by the ownership. And three, there's the fact that a lot of people look at the price point, even if it is just you can get in the building for $82, and say, you know what, all things considered, if it's between that and the, you know, $82, the $30 for parking, I know I'm repeating what I said yesterday, but bear with me, I'm getting somewhere, you know, it's $150 plus the commute, you know, and going and sitting and watching it in high definition with, you know, four friends and a couple of pitchers of beer in a bar, I'm going to take the second option, because really that's more of a shared experience, really, than sitting in a seat surrounded by strangers who probably spend half the game on their phones. And I mean, the way people consume sports is changing, and I really think it's on the media to convey that to people, and rather than just sit there and make demands on the, you know, the marketplace that they support or the business, you know, unconditionally. That's just not the way it works anymore. So again, ultimately, what I'm talking about today is basically here what everything that sort of went into the Senators being located where they are, and everything that the media does or doesn't do to convey it. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, Ottawa's in sort of it is an interesting market, but things change, right? I mean, things go in cycles. It's kind of funny, you know, they were sitting here, me and Ottawa and Pittsburgh are going to play for a spot in the Stanley Cup final on Thursday, and you think back 10 years, exactly 10 years, because the Senators went to the final in 2007, and that year they played the Penguins in the first round of the playoffs, Sidney Crosby's first playoff experience. And it's funny, there's all these, I know, people being, you know, tribal on Twitter, because sports Twitter is like that. All these Pens fans saying, aha, we got the best fans. and all out, you know, Leaf fans are, you know, pointing and sort of laughing at Ottawa and saying, ha ha, you've always, you know, characterized us by the, you know, Bay Street, you know, suit dummies who come to the game halfway through the first period, spend most of it in the sushi and wine bar, and then leave and then have to check their phone the next day to find out not only the score, but who the Leafs actually played. So, you know, it looks good on you. We're going to judge you by the fact that, you know, you have 1,000 empty seats. But, just, you know, don't be dumb like that. And also don't be dumb and tell the and characterize the media as people who got into the game for free. They earned that their way into the game with the sweat off their brow and hustling and whatnot and becoming, you know, credentialed, legitimate media. You know, because it was either that or go work for InfoWars, I guess. But anyways, just getting back to the concept. So 10 years ago, what was happening in each city with respect to, you know, I guess the sports entertainment dollar? Well, in Pittsburgh at the time, the Penguins were almost getting bought by Jim Balsillie. Jim Balsillie was trying to buy the team and move it to Hamilton. What was going on in Ottawa at the time? Well, the Senators were riding high. I mean, they won the President's Trophy in 26. And then in 26-7, they went to the Stanley Cup Final. So, I mean, obviously the apex of the franchise. But what was also going on at the time in Ottawa was they were a year removed from having the Ottawa Renegades shuttered. And the Ottawa Lynx AAA baseball team in the International League were, I mean, everyone kind of knew it was the last season. And the owner, Ray Pecor, was going to, I guess, relocate the team to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and it was kind of like a bitter irony. Here we are, capital city of Canada, and we're losing our baseball team to a city whose economic downturn was immortalized in a Billy Joel song. But at the time, I mean, there were all these people, like, you know, trying to say, like, you know, we got to have a baseball team in Ottawa. You know, we have a stadium that's paid for, it'll last for generations. You know, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. All these people were really like, Ottawa is a hockey town. We only have enough attention and money for the Senators. You know, so there was a lot of, you know, arrogance, you know, in, you know, people basically projecting that, taking the fact, you know, that big league imprimatur and, you know, projecting it toward anyone else who thought, you know, maybe we got to have a little bit of time and space for anything else. And at the time, you know, where were all the Pittsburgh Penguins fans when it was looking like the franchise might get relocated to Hamilton? You know, obviously, so, you know, the world turns over every 24 hours on someone who was sitting on top of it yesterday, I guess, is the point of that. But it's funny how things turn around. Here's all the Penguins, you know, the Penguins fanboys and fangirls talking about how they have the greatest fans in hockey, even though the place emptied out, you know, faster than a Hillary Clinton victory party during the Game 6 loss at home against the Washington Capitals before they won Game 7 in the last round. And here's Ottawa, and they're, you know, the Senators are complaining that, or the Senators apologists are all like, well, look at all the competition we have now in the market, because all of a sudden, Ottawa's got a CFL team with 17,000 season ticket holders and a Grey Cup sold out months in advance. And the Ottawa Fury pro soccer team, you know, had 7,600 people turn out to watch their Voyageurs Cup semifinal first leg against Toronto FC, which they won, which is the high point of the franchise. And it was really disappointing to see a TSN producer portray that there was no one at the game by tweeting a photo that showed the that face down onto the north side of the stadium, which is closed for the soccer games because the Fury are what they are. They're a developmental minor pro level team, and I mean their following is probably comparable to what a junior hockey team should draw. You know, again, 5,000 per game, 7,500 for a peak experience like a cup game against a Major League Soccer team. So again, things change, and I guess the way to look at it is to sort of always be looking at the undercurrents is my general point. I'd literally love to, you know, someone, I'm not the person to do it, to write that book about how the Senators got in this pre-Dilly ictiment, and I really wish people would have more to say than be tribal and have their one-word pejoratives for everything instead of trying to understand it. Cheers. Enjoy the game tomorrow. That's all.